Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. PBS's Antiques Roadshow heads into its 16th season next year with its second largest ever appraisal. It's the original reality show, the one that came before the shows about pawn shops and storage wars on cable TV. Joining us now to talk about her 11 years with the Roadshow is the executive producer, Marsha Bemko. Marsha's television career spans 30 years. In addition to leading the 8-time Emmy Award-nominated Antiques Roadshow, she was executive producer of the companion series Antiques Roadshow FYI. And before that, before joining Roadshow in 1999, she worked on a variety of public affairs programs for PBS, including the award-winning Frontline series. She's also author of the book Antiques Roadshow Behind the Scenes, published in December 2009, makes her a perfect choice to talk about Antiques Roadshow right now. Welcome to the show, Marsha.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
A question for our listeners. What do you want to know about the Antiques Roadshow? It doesn't get any better than Marsha Bemko if you want to get some questions answered. So give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Marsha, you've said you produce two things. You produce an event and a television show. How does it work? How do you divide up your time throughout the year when it comes to the events and then the television shows?
Well, it's a crazy busy year, but I have to say we love it. The Antiques Roadshow tours in June, July, and August. So we tour in the summer, and basically we spend the rest of the year editing the material that we've captured in the summer and getting ready for the next summer, because our events, at every event we produce, and we try to do six cities a summer, we're going to see 5,000 to 6,000 people. So when you see, with two objects each, by the way, so we're going to see 10,000 to 12,000 objects. So by the time you're, to be ready for that, that takes a lot of work to have safely greet that many people. So we have an event producer who that's her sole job. Mm-hmm. And then we spend the rest of the year editing that material. And it will take us, we do capture enough, and we make three shows from every stop that we make. So we're going to make 18 shows, plus we make three more specials. And it will take us until we leave for the next summer, basically, to get all that material edited for consumption on TV. So that's the rhythm of the year, and that keeps us all very busy.
Kind of like the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade routine?
Yeah, it's a big production, so it all looks so smooth. But I think with that Macy's parade, I think they start producing the next year's the day they finish with that parade. And we're like that, too. We're always in motion. Every television show has phases: pre-production, which is where you're getting ready; production, which is where you're capturing and shooting and filming; and then post-production, where you're editing it and making it ready. And I say we're always in post and we're always in pre. So we're always getting ready and we're always editing.
My guest is Marsha Bemko, executive producer of Antiques Roadshow. If you have a question or comment for Marsha, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also go online to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. So appraisers. I wanted to talk to you about the appraisers and how you choose them, and whether or not, to what degree is their appearance on television and how they appear on television a determining factor?
Well, it all counts. We work with a group of about 150 experts, and we assign about 70 to every city. And they will cover over 20 categories. So we will have experts there who are covering paintings or furniture or jewelry, whatever their area of expertise is, so that they can greet our guests and tell them something about it. And now how we choose our appraisers, let me say this in two words, and I'll explain what this means. Very carefully. People come to Antiques Roadshow, people come to public television because they trust us. And so we're going to make sure that anybody who's on our floor is trustworthy. And we do a great amount of work to find that out. First of all, we have been around as we get ready to be premiere with our season 16 shows on January 2nd. We've been around for a while, so most of our appraisers have been with us for a long time. And we trust them, we know them. And these are scholars who are at the top of their game. They have terrific reputations. They have been in the business for decades, which, by the way, is the only way you could, a person can do what they do. I've been producing this show for over 10 years, and I could not be an appraiser, even though I know a dangerous amount.
Mm-hmm.
and so when it comes time every year, we have to add to our roster. It's not a 20-year-old who can do appraising, and so we have people who retire or leave, or sadly, we've had people die in service with us. So we're always replacing our roster of about 150. And when it comes time to look for new people, that's a really interesting and careful search. We will ultimately, after we do the searching around, it's a small world, really, when you get into the environment here. And when you start to ask questions, we're interested in somebody because we need somebody who knows paintings or we need somebody who knows collectibles. Well, then you start to talk to people and you find out, in addition to background checks, that typical, you know, that stuff you do, but then you find out what's the buzz about this person's name. Do they have good business practices? Are they known to be honest? And once they pass muster there, and of course, ultimately, do they know what they're talking about? Because it's a tricky business, and there's a lot to know. And so once they pass muster with all of us snooping around in their lives like that, we'll assign them to our set. Now, you'll know, everybody who watches Antiques Roadshow knows that a lot of our experts are very knowledgeable, but maybe aren't what you would want to do watching one of those experts for a full hour because they're not television personalities. They're knowledgeable folks who can present a great story and who do perform well. We have experts who are so tongue-tied that we'll give them a chance and we'll help school them. It can be nerve-wracking, by the way, to sit out there in front of all those cameras. So when we bring somebody new on, we start them with single camera shooting them. Get them used to what it's like to be in front of the camera because we want them to succeed. And so knowledgeable people aren't always going to have an easy time with that. But I think we get them so that they're comfortable and they can tell stories. And we have so many of them that by the time we put everybody together, it's good and watchable television. But it sure does matter. If they can't talk, well, you can't understand them. And so we're going to look for somebody who knows everything. And that, by the way, ultimately makes it a small pool of people who could choose from.
How do they make their pitches to you when they find an item that they think is show worthy? How does that work? You have the people in those long lines. I all we ever get to see is the people shuffling in the background. But somebody discovers something. They're like, wow. And they immediately contact the producers on site?
Yeah, the appraisers are on the front lines, and unless it's jewelry, they see a good object coming from across the room, and they're excited. And there's more than one of them. If they're in furniture or if they're in paintings, there's several people in each category. So they're hoping that person gets to them.
Mm-hmm.
And most people are going to walk up to the table, and they're going to find out that their glass that they brought in is, I don't know, circa 1950, and it's worth $20. And by the way, a lot of people hear $20.
Okay.
A lot of people hear $100. Most of what we see is worth well under $500. And they'll ask the guests what else they want to know, and they'll walk away and they'll be done. But then somebody walks up with something that tickles the appraiser's fancy. They are the ones on the front lines, not the producers. In that way, as far as selecting the items that are worthy to talk about, they know. And instead, they'll ask that guest to say, "This is interesting. I'd like to talk to a producer about it. Do you mind waiting?" And they wait behind our set walls there that you can see when you're watching our show, those blue walls. And then either myself or Sam Farrell or Jill Giles, who work with me, will go over and interview both the appraiser and the guest. And we'll find out from that appraiser what he has to teach us. What are we going to learn about this object? Why is it so great? Why do you want to talk about it? And find out from the guest, how did they get the item? Everybody has a great acquisition story. It's often an inherited object, or they found it, or they bought it, or maybe they paid good money or not good money, but whatever, we all want to know what that is. And then based on those two sets of interviews, decide whether or not to capture it. And by the way, we have different ways. As time marches on, so many different ways to capture great stories, which is terrific because more stories come in than we can possibly capture. That's for sure. With 5,000 to 6,000 people, and we're going to capture for camera about 90 Obviously, it's a small percentage of what's coming in. So we can capture it in your with the more than one camera, the typical interview that you imagine when you see Antiques Roadshow, our multiple camera, which is what we call that, interviews, or we can do a single camera interview, or now we're Antiques Roadshow, not an antique. We have our web team out there shooting web-exclusive material. So if you haven't got enough Roadshow, by the way, we have more of it, pbs.org/antiques, more appraisals there. And we often have a print companion there as well. So we will try to capture those good stories one way or another. But the appraisers are desperately pitching. Now, I have to give them a shout-out because all of our experts believe in public television, believe in what they're doing, and they contribute their services to the extent that they pay their own travel,
wow.
They pay their own hotel.
Okay.
And the only thing, we treat them to lunch on Saturday. Yeah, we feed them. We got to feed them. But other than that, they're paying their own way. So they're also motivated to sort of get a return on their investment and hopefully make television.
You know,
they'll pitch a good story.
I mentioned at the outset that Antiques Roadshow kind of came before the, storage wars, before the pawn shop shows on cable television. Why do you think it's been able to endure that kind of competition now versus, 16 years ago? Very different.
Yeah, I like to say we're the granddaddy mm-hmm. of the genre. I think we are first. And everybody sort of takes it, and I appreciate many of those shows. I get a hoot out of many of them. I think everybody takes a different approach. The business is so complicated that you're going to learn something different about how to approach buying and selling from storage wars than you will from auction hunters. And what Antiques Roadshow does is very different. The rules of appraising, by the way, and if you look at the different appraisal societies that many appraisers belong to, or frankly, most don't belong to, but some do,
mm-hmm.
That whenever anybody who's appraising an object, it's unethical to buy it. And obviously, there's a conflict of interest there. You can't tell somebody what it's worth and then buy it because, well, you may tell them it's worth a lot less than it really is.
Mm-hmm.
And so why even be tempted into that position? Well, what Antiques Roadshow does is technically verbal approximations of value. An appraisal is a written document. But our appraisals, for shorthand here, we're going to make sure that we follow those same guidelines. And that is that even our experts on the floor, if you are interested in having one of them sell your objects, you're not going to discuss it that day. You're going to have to wait till we leave town to contact them. So we stay away, and we're pure information. So you'll see what's happening on the other shows, and it's all good. I think that's all good. But you'll come to us for pure information you can trust, where there's no buying and selling, no motivation other than to tell you more about what you own, including history, value. And I think that's what makes us a success, and I think that's why we're here to stay. The BBC, by the way, who we licensed the show from, they're
right.
in their 34th year. So we've got a long future.
My guest is Marcia Bemko. She's executive producer of Antiques Roadshow. If you have any questions or comments for her, give us a call, 614-292-8513. If you have a memory from an Antiques Roadshow, from watching it for 16 years, or maybe you know someone who's been on the show and you want to tell us their story, give us a call. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, the Iraq War and America. After almost 9 years, the troops are nearly home. We weigh the war. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point begins this afternoon at 1 o'clock on 89.7 NPR News. 56 degrees with some light rain in downtown Columbus. Occasional showers off and on throughout the day and steady temperatures right around 57 degrees. Clouds tonight cooling off to a low of 31. Sunny for Friday and a much cooler day with a high of 39.
Support for 89.7 comes from United Way of Central Ohio. United Way brings partners together with community support to create lasting change in people's lives through programs in education, income, health, and home. More at liveunitedcentralohio.org.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
My guest is Marcia Bemko, executive producer of Antiques Roadshow. Marcia, I wanted to go back in time a little bit to Antiques Roadshow special. It's called Simply the Best. It was broadcast actually last month, and you highlighted some classic roadshow appraisals. Let's listen to this one about a letter sent by Frank Sinatra to Chicago newspaper columnist Mike Royko in response to a Royko column from 1976. In this one, the appraiser is talking with the owner of the Sinatra letter, Vi Carlson.
"Lastly," he says, "I will allow you to pull my hairpiece. If it moves, I will give you another $100,000. If it does not, I punch you in the mouth. How about it?" He signs it Sinatra. I conferred with some of my colleagues here, and we all agree that it is the best Sinatra letter we ever read.
Doesn't it sound just like him?
Oh, it's him all the way. And it's still a famous letter, and people remember it today. And as such, I would estimate it at auction at least $15,000.
And her reaction, I mean, that's a very, that doesn't even do it slight justice. It was a great roadshow moment. She went, started hugging everybody, asking everybody she could see, "Do you believe it? Do you believe it?" It was so sweet.
It's so delicious. And I, what television producers do, by the way, is by the time you're watching footage, we've watched it 100 gazillion times. And even as you play the audio for me, this is my favorite appraisal from last summer. I love this moment. I love her acquisition story. I love her reaction to what's happened. It's a real moment. She's a pistol. And, it's a great appraisal. That's one of our best appraisals.
And it made me think about a question that I often have watching it. When someone gets one of these whopper appraisals, or at least relatively huge compared to what her initial investment was, $400, does someone escort her out and make sure she's safe getting out of there? Sometimes people are leaving with what they walked in with, thinking, you know, maybe a couple $1,000s, and it's, you know, turns out to be hundreds, you know, many, many tens of thousands of dollars. What about that?
Great question. It gives me a chance to boast about things most people won't notice. We have two types of law enforcement on the set at Antiques Roadshow and around the set, because we take up a whole convention center. We have both uniformed and plainclothes law enforcement. And for those who have things of great value, they are escorted to their cars. We also have a very strict policy, which annoys some of the press, by the way. We will not give the press our guests' last names. And we do warn our guests not to tell the press their last names. There are opportunists out there who would, we don't, I want to sleep at night, by the way, and I do. I don't want to worry about a woman who lives alone with a $250,000 painting hanging on her wall being a victim of a crime. So we not only protect our guests' physical presence as long as we can till we get them to their car, but we protect them after that forever. And unless you know them, because you know them as you watch them on television, in that case, hopefully you're their friend. And we've never had anybody be hurt, by the way. Because of these kind of policy. So we take good care of our guests. I know if I were on Antiques Roadshow with a $100,000 item, I wouldn't want everybody knowing my last name.
Right. Do you talk to people about that? I mean, are they aware that? Okay.
Yes, we do. We talk, our publicists tell them, and our publicists tell the press that. And we've had a couple of large newspapers, I won't say who claimed they wouldn't come cover the show with this policy. But in the long run on that day, they decided to be there. So, yeah, we take real good care. Our guests are everything. Without them, they're the stars of the show. They're and their objects are the stars of the show. So we would never want anything that would happen that would have anybody lose confidence or be concerned about coming to Roadshow.
Rob in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
I wanted to say, I think the reason that Roadshow is so popular is the appraisal. You know, what makes Pawn Stars great is when the expert comes in and gives the appraisal. And, of course, they dicker with the guy behind the counter, and he doesn't realize he's dealing with a pawn shop. But and the same thing with the storage wars. It's the appraisal that's the exciting part. We've got, you know, people bringing fantastic things, finding fantastic things, and that's the exciting thing. So I just wanted to say I think that's what makes Roadshow so great and why I've been a viewer for all these years, too. And thanks. I'll take my comments off the air and keep listening.
Thank you, Rob.
Well, I like that. Of course, we make as many appraisals as possible. That's why we keep making more and putting them on the web. We can't give our viewers enough appraisals. He's right. He nailed it.
I'm pretty sure my 15, 16-year-old son loves the show because of the history. He's kind of a history buff.
What we are is ultimately smart reality television. And you cannot watch a season of Antiques Roadshow and not learn when the Civil War happened. You will learn the years through the objects in a fun way. All of a sudden, you know something, but you don't even remember. It goes down like with a spoonful of sugar. It's interesting to learn it because you want to understand where that object came from. And I say we're smart reality television.
614-292-8513. You can call that number and speak with the executive producer of Antiques Roadshow, Marcia Femko. Do you find, obviously you say you get three stories out of every event. Do you necessarily find something amazing at every event?
We always find amazing things. What we don't find at every event, although last summer will prove me wrong because it did happen last summer, is a six-figure object. You know what I mean? 100,000 or over. We will always find five-figure objects, but there, when it comes to extreme value that way, that speaks to rarity. Things that have that kind of value are always rare. And that's why it is possible to look at 12,000 objects and not find something of that kind of value. The season premiere that we have coming up this year from Tulsa, which actually is our record for our most valuable find ever. It is a five rhinoceros horn libation cups that are worth between $1 million and $1.5 million. Now, this is an extraordinary amount of money, and he has a great acquisition story, which I can tell you. But he that kind of thing, it took us 16 years to find that, to find something of that kind of value. So it's always rare, and that's why that's worth that kind of money. And generally, as a rule, things that are worth that kind of money were expensive at the time they were made.
And was that the case in his case? Did he invest?
So his acquisition story is really interesting because he is a stereotypical collector. And in this job, I've met quite a few. he bought his first rhinoceros horn cup in, I think it was Bath, England, on some decades ago for $500 and didn't eat that week because he loves rhinoceros horn cups. Now, we all have our thing. I would never want to collect those. I go for diamonds and other things myself here, but this is what turns him on is these things. And then he, throughout the years, bought four more by trading with other collectors for something somebody had that he wanted this and that and spent a couple thousand here. All told, on all five cups, spent probably around $5,000 or $6,000. Now, he's a knowledgeable collector. He's been watching the market. But what even, this is why antiques are tricky. These are, by the way, late 17th, early 18th century cups. He knew they were good, but he had no clue they were that good. And that, by the way, is an auction estimate. An insurance replacement value on that would be much higher. So he was stunned. But like all, and not all, in the word of antiques, you have to use word things like most. But like most of our guests, no matter what it's worth, it'll be a long time before he sells them. He hasn't sold them yet. And like most collectors, they collect because they love these things. Right. And he will find it hard to part with them. And so
And a lot of people, it's their possessions that have been handed down through the family.
And that's another good reason not to sell something. And it's why, basically, no matter what it's worth, most of our guests do not sell their objects. I can tell you stories of people who have. There are, of course, exceptions to that rule. But as a rule, most do not sell it. And there's good reason for that, especially with an inherited object. Let's face it, if you sell it, even if you could find one just like it, you can't find the one that was your great-great-grandmother. So there's sentimental value, which is a very hard thing to put a price tag on. The other thing, and keep this in mind as you listen to our show, there's different kinds of estimates different you'll hear. And usually the person saying it gives you a hint there. It's an auctioneer who will give you an auction estimate, just like Lark Mason, who did those rhinoceros horn cups. He's an auctioneer, and that's why he gave it. It's an estimate he's comfortable giving. That's the market he knows. A dealer will give you a retail, an insurance replacement. And in some categories, something that is worth $5,000 at auction, $10,000 for a dealer, and $12,000 for insurance is the same price. But a fair price for a dealer to pay, if you ever sell something to one, is half of what he can sell it for. That's how retail works, whether you're selling shoes or antiques.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always a cost to sell. An auctioneer will charge a seller's premium, unless, of course, you have something like rhinoceros horn cups that are worth over $1 million, you can probably negotiate that thing away because they'll get the buyer's premium. But generally, it's about 20% if you're going to go to auction to sell something. So the day you sell your object, darn, you can't afford to buy it back.
Julie.
So people think long and hard before they part with something they care about, yeah.
Julie in Westerville, you're on the air with Marcia Bemko. Welcome to the show. Julie?
I am so excited to see you on the program this morning, Marcia. It's my day off, and how lucky for me. I love watching Antique Roadshow. We've watched, me and my extended family have watched you for years, and we love your program.
Thank you.
I've got a couple comments for you. The first one, as you know, PBS is fundraising right now, and I just wanted to throw this in real quick. I didn't tell your screening lady this, but my three kids are teenagers, and my 15-year-old daughter and I were watching Celtic Women the other day, maybe it was the little girl who sings opera, and I said, you got to watch this girl. She's incredible. And she says, oh, I know she's got to be incredible. I said, why is that? She goes, well, she's on PBS.
Oh,
and I thought that was a big compliment to PBS, that, you know, that she equates PBS with quality. But anyway, back to antiques.
Thank you, Julie.
Yes, you're welcome. But anyway, I wanted to tell you my two favorite people, and I couldn't tell you what year they were, but I absolutely love the early teen girl who goes dumpster diving with her mom, and she finds a painting.
Yes, the
and
folk art painting, yes, with Nancy Druckmann appraised. Yeah, that's a great story, and she's a darling little girl.
Yes, she was. And then I love the man who is on his way to get one item appraised, stops at a garage sale, and buys a chair.
I remember that.
For $2. Turns out to be Chippendale, I think, chair worth, like, I don't know, what was it, $100,000 or something like that?
Yeah, that one is escaping me. I have thousands of appraisals in my head, and
sure.
I'm not nailing that one in my head right now.
But, Julie,
now.
I remember that one. That was freakish.
Yeah, and I was like, for me, just a regular family, middle to lower class America, you know, struggling like the rest of Americans, I was like, yay, the underdog, you know?
it's great to hear, and I think that it is great to hear those roadshow fantasy stories.
Yes,
it's a very fortunate guest who's able to tell the story.
Right.
And I don't know about you, but I fantasize about being them.
But I wanted to tell
even
you,
as producer.
I wanted to tell you that you've changed my family's opinion. You know, not much in America you can go stay in America and have an adventure. And if you consider, I grew up, out of economy, going to garage sales. My husband is grew up opposite, and he has changed his way of thinking, and it's a treasure hunt for him when we go garage sailing in the spring and summer here in Ohio. And for me, it's, you know, different things to put in my home, but I absolutely love the excitement and the adventure, and you just don't know what you're going to find.
That's right.
And it's completely, you know, it's exciting to our whole family, my children, and now you get the whole recycle, repurpose, all the shows that are on nowadays, things you can do, and you look at your program, and the history involved. I love the history. My kids get all excited with, you know, the three teenagers. It's hard to capture a teenager. And it's like, well, how did they use those products? And you've just done a wonderful thing, and I really appreciate your program.
Hearing you say that, frankly, is so rewarding because it does inspire. You hope that that's the response that a viewer is having when you work hard to do your best work and hope exactly what you're saying happens, that the kids are involved and inspired to ask questions and appreciate what we do. So thank you.
Thanks a lot, Julie, for that call. 614-292-8513. If you would like to speak with our guest, Marcia Bemko, executive producer of Antiques Roadshow. We have an email from Angel. She writes, how do you get a painting authenticated? My mother believes she has a Norman Rockwell painting, but we aren't sure. It was cleaned 15 years ago, and the cleaners offered $5,000 for the painting. So what's your recommendation after 11 years on the job, Marcia?
Well, I would say if it is a Rockwell, well, it could be worth quite a bit of money. There are different ways of getting an appraisal, and I assume that they're not interested in selling it because they haven't, and they had it cleaned, so they spent the money to do that. So, if they're wanting an appraisal for insurance, they can check with. Literally in their area, they can look online. They can also check with an auction house that has a good reputation in their community because they often do appraisals as well. An appraisal, which is a written document, and something of a painting with that kind of value should have its own appraisal and its own insurance writer, is a written document and not what Roadshow does. We may tell you when you leave us, you should go home and get. You need to pay for that, a written appraisal. And if that's what your interest is in keeping it safe, the painting safe and protected that way, I'd do it that way. If interested in selling the item, and once you go to do that, in order to sell it, they need to authenticate it. They will tell you it's a Rockwell or not because they're not going to represent and sell it if it isn't. And that kind of item with that potential kind of value, it's like selling a house. Do not talk to one person. Talk to at least three. And make sure I would talk to at least four. I talk to at least two auctioneers, and I talk to at least two dealers. It's not always obvious it's the right way to go. A dealer can give you a solid deal. Things don't always take off at auction like they think they might. They can go below the estimate as well, and assess what you hear from different folks, and that'll get you your answer.
Marcia, were you an antiques buff or a history buff when you started on the show?
I've always been an information buff, which is what led me to public television.
Journalism background.
I've always appreciated things, and I've always been a practical person. So I found myself interested while I was in college when I needed a desk. Well, which was the most inexpensive way to find one? And that was in secondhand shops, antiques. But now that I've met the collector types, like the man I told you about who didn't eat so he could have a rhinoceros horn cup, or I've met our experts, because they're all really collectors who learned a way to make a living out of what they love to do. There's a passion there that is so focused that I don't qualify. They are very, very focused and passionate. And I think, by the way, that's part of the other reason we like watching them. Their enthusiasm for what they love and do is quite contagious.
My guest, Marcia Bemko, executive producer of Antiques Roadshow, will be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Receive daily updates from WOSU by liking our station on Facebook or by following WOSU News on Twitter. Another way to connect with us is by subscribing to our Daily News Loop e-newsletter. Visit WOSU.org/email to sign up.
This is 89.7 NPR News in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. During Hour 2 of All Sides, hear about jukebox musicals with two performers from the touring company of Mamma Mia. That discussion begins at 11 on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from Columbus College of Art and Design, where the spring semester of Saturday morning art classes for children and youth begins February 4th. Information and online registration are available at www.ccad.edu.
Many Happy Returns to Lazarus commemorates the store on High Street that opened in 1851 and has a place in the heart of generations of Central Ohioans. Take a trip down Memory Lane Sunday evening at 7 on WOSU-TV. Occasional showers today and a high of 57 degrees. Clouds tonight cooling off to a low of 31. Sunny for Friday, so the rain finally goes away, but colder, a high of just 39 degrees. Partly cloudy Friday night, a low of 28. Looking ahead to the weekend, partly sunny on Saturday and a high near 40. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
January 2nd is the kickoff date for the 16th season of Antiques Roadshow. Our guest today is Marcia Bemko. She's the executive producer of Antiques Roadshow. We'll take your questions and comments if you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. In another roadshow special, Marcia, from 2004, Greatest Finds, you highlighted an appraisal that took place in Columbus in 1999. The great, great, great granddaughter of Ebenezer Hazard, one of our nation's first postmaster generals, brought a book of documents and some papers, and at first the appraiser wasn't too impressed, but then he found a letter among the papers. Let's listen.
But it is very important because it's in Thomas Jefferson's own hand, and it's one of the most important documents that an act of Congress could actually accomplish, which was ceding a whole bunch of territory, including a lot of Ohio, to the United States. I would estimate this letter alone, with its attending document inside, to be worth $100,000.
Okay, again, the shock is truncated there a little bit. The woman who owned the Thomas Jefferson letter didn't jump up and down, but you could see she was quite impressed. It's not just the monetary value of these documents. It has to be exciting to discover an important piece of American history right in your, you know, right in your desk drawer practically.
Yeah, exciting for her, and I'll be a little selfish here. Very exciting for Antiques Roadshow as well.
The appraiser was very excited about that.
Yeah. Well, we are often, and I can name other instances as well, where we're the first documenters of an important point in our timeline in history, whether it's something like this that's important to the country's history or pop culture history or understanding needleworks, whatever. We have often been the first to see something and the first to document it. There's still much that scholars study and don't know, and to contribute to the understanding in this instance of what Jefferson's personal letter, of how Jefferson felt about this, because he had sent this letter to the guest's ancestor to be part of the collection. The ancestor, by the way, was one of the first postmasters of the country and was well known for collecting important documents. And Jefferson wanted him to have this important document and wrote the letter for the guest ancestor to collect. So how delightful for the guest to learn how important in time that is, and how delightful for us to be able to be the first one to document that.
You know, that was a happy ending story. How do you decide when and how to use an appraisal that reveals someone's been overpaid, someone overpaid for something, or was actually ripped off on something? That could probably be kind of emotional in another way.
Oh, yes, okay. But don't you just love those moments when you're watching on TV? So, I mean, I hate to admit it, but
it can be good theater, so
us.
I was wondering, how do you pick, you know, what makes a good one of those?
The greatest lessons we often get about understanding an object are through fakes or reproductions or, you know, intentional deceit there, and so that we can show you what to look for if you're out there. So there are great lessons in them. And we always try, when we confront that situation, to be gentle with our guest and to be kind, so that as we bring them to the unfortunate conclusion that is not what they're expecting to hear, we're kind to tell them. We've had guests upset with that news who may want to disagree, and I always advise they go get another opinion. We are about opinions. I think what they end up finding out is they confirm what we've told them, but nonetheless, it is worth checking it. But nonetheless, we're going to not shy away from those moments, and frankly, we wish we had more to tape to show you. And what you see is often what's walking through the door. We have no idea what's coming through the door. That makes us reality TV. And we wish we had more fakes to capture to talk to our audience and teach them more. So when a good one comes through the door, we're gonna capture that and we're gonna share it with the nation. So you can learn what the experts see that the rest of us don't see without them pointing it out to us.
Kathy in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Kathy.
Hi. I was just wondering, how do you choose the cities that you're going to do the show in for the summer?
And I bet next you're going to ask me, can we please come to your
city? Well, I was going to. Kathy just beat me to it. So.
Like,
what do we have to do, Marcia?
We are everybody's favorite at this time of year. Everybody wants us to come to their city. We're a good news visit. And I'm sitting here looking at the map, and I often joke we throw darts. But it's a very careful thing with one major restriction, and that is, does your city have a venue space of 80 to 100,000 square feet of space that can hold the event? And in some instances, the answer for an entire state is no. For instance, we can't go to Wyoming. And there are places where we've gone where we've jury-rigged it as much as we can because we want to go to unique cities. So it starts with this very boring requirement. Do you have a convention center? For the most part is what it usually is. They're the kind of folks who have that set up. And then once you have that, there are a very boring list of requirements about our electricity needs and the layout needs, yada, yada. And then, of course, where were we last year? We are not going to go to Charleston one summer and then go to Myrtle Beach the next. So we're going to make sure that we spread out as best as we can. We are going to be in every region of the – we're going to do 6 cities a summer, assuming our funding will support that. And we're going to get to 6 areas of the country. And so it's really all – that's how it's done. And everybody wants us to come, and we want to get to new places. So our hope is to always get to new places. But the country is an interesting thing that happens when you come to work at Antiques Roadshow full-time. And you look at the map, and we're trying to decide where to go. And then suddenly I know that you've been here long enough when you say, wow, it's a really small country, because you run out of choices.
Kathy, thanks for that call. So are communities pitching to you?
Oh, yes, they are. Communities pitch to us. Public television stations want us to come. So we have very many friends who want us to come and will convince us. And by the way, one of the things people will try to convince us, especially when you get into the city pitching us, is what great history they have. We have a great country. It may be flawed, but every city has great history, and that is not an influencer for us.
Chris, on the east side, you're on the show. Welcome, Chris.
Yes, I'd like to know, is Mark still going to be the host of the show?
Mark Wahlberg?
Mm-hmm.
Mark L. Wahlberg, he sure is. He's signed up for next season, and I think he's a great viewer advocate. He asked the questions we would ask if we were standing there talking with the expert. But do you like him?
Chris? Do you like Mark?
Yeah.
Well, that's good news. We adore him. We think he does a great job for us. From a television production point of view, a producer talk, he's very agile, and he makes our jobs easy.
Okay, Chris, thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Sarah in Dublin, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I just wanted to say how much I love, love, love Antiques Roadshow. I've been watching it for many, many years. But my question is, I love the portion of the program at the end of the program where you have, I think you call it the feedback booth.
We sure do.
And I love those people. They're so funny. So I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about how you select the ones that you're going to put on the air, how many people do you, you go through before you select that? And just talk a little bit about that, and I'll hang up and take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Sarah.
Okay, thank you.
That is – what a great question. Mm-hmm. And she talks about feedback booth, which comes after the end of the show. We take a little break there for a message, and then we finish the show. And what happens there is so nice, because what we do is we set this up so that as you're leaving our convention center, anybody can tape. You didn't get picked because your object wasn't of interest to the expert. Anybody who comes through can tape. you stand in that line and you can tell us what you thought of your day or something about what you learned about your object. And what and we use about a minute and a half of that material in each episode at the end of each episode. So do the math there, right? We're using about 6 minutes at most, or maybe a little bit longer, depends. But we probably capture somewhere between 4 and 6 hours of that material before to select those minutes. So we are selecting very delicious moments. They're honest, undirected moments of how a guest feels. And America is filled with creative and delightful and humorous and serious people, all of which I think you see a little flavor of everybody when you watch our feedback booth. And I love hearing the reaction, of course, everybody when I meet them and they learn that I produce the show. They want to tell me what they think of parts of the show. Feedback booth, most people love it. Nobody feels indifferent about it. You either love it or you don't.
I love the feedback booth.
Oh, I do too.
It's just because you're just seeing more ordinary people. Just, you know, it seems like it's the great masses out there, and they are. You're right. They're very funny often. When it comes to deciding what you'll bring to what one might bring to a roadshow appraisal, you've told people to start with something that they're curious about and can't easily Google.
Here you are in a room with 70 of the country's top experts who can supply an answer that searching online can't. And we, by the way, the other selection part of the city selection is we will never repeat a city in any less than 5 years at the least, and we like more time in between. And so we're not going to be back in your town anytime soon. And here you are, and you have a ticket. By the way, we ticket all of our events. And what we will do after we announce the tour is you'll register on our website for tickets, and we give out 3,000 pairs of tickets to the public. But we've had as many as 35,000 people register for those 3,000 pairs of tickets in some cities. So you're finally on Antiques Roadshow set. Don't try to impress us. We can't be impressed. We see things that are worth $1 million, like I told you. So come with something you really want to learn, because you will. And it's a unique opportunity to do it. And we're not going to be back in town soon. And if we are, will you get a ticket? So take advantage of us. We're here to answer your questions.
Jerry in Youngstown, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. I enjoy watching the Antique Roadshow. It puts history on a personal level, and it makes it interesting to learn about the history in Ohio, well, in the United States, or part of that country where they're at. And I also enjoy watching the British Antique Roadshow, because it gives their part of history, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and also, I have to laugh. Youngstown, Ohio, did go to the Antique Roadshow because we do have a visitor convocation center, but apparently it's not big enough.
Oh.
See, so you've already talked to your convention center and you've heard what we told them. And
yeah,
not every convention center works.
Thank you. Thanks, Jerry.
Yes.
Take care.
You too.
The upcoming season is starting. Where did you go for this season, Marcia?
Yeah, and I almost have to use a cheat sheet to tell you, because
okay.
That's how it gets. And it's not an age thing, because people who are 25 do the same thing. We went to Eugene, Oregon. And by the way, every place we go, we have to learn how to really say the name of the state.
Oregon?
The city.
Okay.
Oregon, yeah. El Paso, Texas, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Atlanta, Georgia, and Pittsburgh, PA. And we start the season on with Tulsa, Oklahoma, because that's the place where we found our rhinoceros horn cups.
Is it been since 1999? Do you have a cheat sheet for that since you've been to Columbus?
Last time we were in Columbus was 1999. That I know.
So...
Yes, I have a cheat sheet for that because they warned me before you called.
So let me do my math here.
But we would love to come back to Ohio. But we've been to Ohio.
Yeah, Cleveland.
Yes.
And Cincinnati,
I
think.
We've been to Cincinnati, too. So we could come back to Ohio. Whether or not we're in Columbus, it's close enough to have to come and register for tickets
right.
And want to be with us.
Are some states more history-rich, antique-rich than others?
I think you'll, it depends on what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. I think that in the Northeast or in the East Strip, in the East Coast there, the country was settled there first. And
yeah.
So you'll see a lot of old things in that area. And but our stuff has feet, and we have become a great melting pot. So stuff moves with people, especially treasured and good things. And that's why we see great Boston furniture in Hawaii and vice versa. So, and I think if you're looking for things that are like mid-century modern, then California's the place to go. So it depends on what you're jonesing for, but yeah, the East Coast is still a pretty good place to be.
And why does it have to be that large of a space? That's just what it takes to snake that many people through?
We actually have to divide our setup into two areas. So it needs a way to be able to divide that space, or you would not hear the show because of the waiting crowd. The ambient sound in the room is too loud. So, and we have to put up our lighting truss in the set area in order to accommodate all those 70 appraisers over 25 categories is a decent sized set. So, and that's in a separate room. So by the time you put the people, the set, our electrical lighting requirements, we can do it with 80,000 square feet of space. Mm-hmm. We'd like 100. But, yeah, that's what it takes. A lot of people. We're a really big show.
There is the. You are so big.
We're a really big show.
You're so much a part of the culture that it's become the subject of comedy and YouTube videos, like the college comedy parody version of Antiques Roadshow. Have you seen that?
Of course.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Set in the year 25. Yeah.
I love the ads that some companies have done and spoofed us. It's a compliment, and but ultimately, even whether you're 12 or 80 or whatever age you are, we still have a lot of you watching Antiques Roadshow, so you're spoofing us because you love us. So we're happy for that.
Marcia Bemko, thanks for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's been a good hour.
Marcia Bemko, she's executive producer of Antiques Roadshow. It starts its 16th season on January 2nd on WOSU Television and PBS. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, we hear from Muppeteer Kevin Clash, who performs Sesame Street's Elmo and is the subject of the new documentary, Being Elmo. He'll bring Elmo to the interview. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Catchy. He loves to sing la 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 Elmo's song.
Always sing it.
La 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 la, la 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 Elmo's song.
And Fresh Air begins later today at noon on 89.7 NPR News. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus. And streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media. And time is running out for you to make your tax-deductible 2011 contribution to 89.7. Pledge at WOSU.org/2011 or by phone at 866-897-9678. Happy holidays and Happy New Year from WOSU Public Media, and thanks for your support. 57 degrees in downtown Columbus at 1 minute before 11. Occasional showers today, a high of 57 degrees. Clouds tonight, a low of 31. Sunshine for Friday, a much cooler day with a high of just 39. And this is 89.7 NPR News, and it's 11 o'clock.
Mama Mia, here I go again. Mama, how can I resist her?
ABBA's original version of Mama Mia was a hit back in the day, but who knew their pop tunes would inspire Mama Mia, the hit Broadway musical, and start a whole new trend. Coming up on All Sides, we'll talk with two members of the national touring company of Mama Mia about their roles, jukebox, musicals, and more. And then the Bike Lady and Holiday Gifts for Foster Kids. Join us on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News and streaming online at WOSU.org/allsides.